From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, Robert Frost said a poem begins with a lump in the throat, and Gwendolyn Brooks said poetry is life distilled. And Percy Shelley called poets our unacknowledged legislators. With the advent of hip-hop and slam poetry, we've seen poetry morph and change, and today young people seem to have made the recitation of poetry more an oral art. In the upcoming Forum Hour, we concentrate our attention on young poets as the 13th Annual Youth Poetry Slam Competition is set to take place beginning next week. We'll hear the work of some of the poets who are in the event and involved in next week's competition, and we'll hear as well from a woman who for the past 25 years has run the We Poets program. Forum is next with your calls and emails after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum. In this hour, we want to focus our attention on youth and poetry as the 13th Annual Poetry Slam Competition is about to begin next week. We're also at the 25th anniversary mark of We Poets, a cable television program designed to showcase young poets while training them in television production. And let me tell you who is here with us in studio. We're going to talk briefly with Sally Joan Baker of We Poets, but James Cass is here. He's founder and executive director of Youth Speaks Teen Poetry Slam. Good morning. Welcome, James Cass. We'll also say good morning to Denizen Kane, a musician and poet and artist in residence of Youth Speaks.
Peace. How you doing?
Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
Simone Crew is also here with us, and San Francisco high school student, member of Youth Speaks Green Team.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Glad to have you. And Lauren Whitehead, who is a poet and program director at Youth Speaks. Hi.
Good morning.
Welcome to all of you. And Sally Joan Baker, welcome to you. Glad to have you aboard.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. I thought, actually, I would introduce you by saying you are the executive producer and host of We Poets, which is an El Cerrito-based public access television show produced by young people and featuring young poets celebrating, and congratulations on this, 25th anniversary. But you also, we should mention, provide job training and literacy skills. I mean, this is a lot of work with sort of getting kids off the street and making them not only put themselves into poetry, but put themselves into things like learning television production and that sort of thing?
That's correct.
Well, congratulations on all the work you've been doing. March 8th, Sunday, March 8th, from 2 to 5, there will be at Barnes & Noble in Oakland, Jack London Square, a celebration. And we're going to hear one of these We Poets. But before we do, you always say these kids love being on television and you got to put a happy face on them as much as you can.
That's right. Poetry is fun, so we have to have a smile when we do our poetry.
Poetry is fun, but poetry can be painful, too. Poetry comes out of pain, doesn't it?
That's true.
But these kids are really psyched up about poetry, aren't they?
Oh, wonderful. And they have such wonderful poets. I interview children between the ages of 6 and 13, and no two are alike. They're all a different flower.
And this started with a bus ride?
That's right.
Sounds like Rosa Parks. I mean, how to explain that to us?
Well, I was riding on a bus down to Oakland, sitting behind two young boys, and they were having a difficult time reading a newspaper. And I thought, what can I do to help these children learn how to read? So I decided I'd start a poetry program.
And give us your best success story, can you?
Oh, my best success story. They're all success stories. I can't single out just one right now. They're all a different jewel.
Well, let's hear from one of these jewels. In fact, this is we're going to hear a clip from the We Poets television show. Let's just hear it.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mac Wilfox, and I'm going to perform one of the first poems I have written called Too Much. Black on Black Murder. Black on black crime, it's too much to handle for a young boy's mind. 16, even 12 years old on the grind. Pockets are too fat, but souls are empty. Go dumb all day, but can't graduate. It's too much. We're young, see? What we see is what we do. It is our choice to do something, to live. It is our choice to be something, something called alive. Alive, I said. Is that too much to live for? Or is it too much? Young girls on the corner selling their bodies. It's too much. I am more than just a t-shirt or a picture on a hoodie. Is that too much? Or what?
That was 12-year-old Mac Woodfox appearing on Sally Baker's cable show, We Poets, which is on Comcast Channel 26 in El Cerrito. They're celebrating their 25th anniversary this year. And that's I guess, in some ways, indicative of the kind of young people who come and express their emotions, as that young man did. Sally?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is a lot of emotion that comes out of this.
Lots of emotion. I find that so many of the children like to write about war, war either here in this country or war abroad.
And you've, by your figuring, talked to how many kids?
About 32,000 in the past 25 years.
Yeah, that's a lot of young people.
A lot of young people.
Yeah. Well, you're turning some of them into poets and turning them away from the streets and getting them involved in literacy skills and television skill production. So I congratulate you on all the work you've done. In fact, we should mention that you were one of the, during Black History Month, one of 2005 KQED heroes.
That's correct.
So congratulations again on the work you've done. And let me thank you again for being with us. Your phone number, by the way, for more information is 510 in the 510 area code, 848-6905. And you're inviting people to get in touch with you freely.
That's right. That's the We Poets office.
Especially if they have young poets aspiring or otherwise.
Right. Either young poets or people who would like to be our interns and produce our weekly program.
Sally Joan Baker, executive producer and host of We Poets, thank you. And again, congratulations on the quarter of a century.
Thank you for inviting us.
Glad to have you. And now we're going to go to James Cass and find out about the Teen Poetry Slam coming up next week. What do we got in store, James?
Well, this is the 13th year that Youth Speaks has put on the Youth Speaks Teen Poetry Slam. Over 400 young people from throughout the Bay Area, teenagers, will participate. It's essentially a celebration of young people's voice, young people's talent, young people's creativity. We do it all throughout the Bay Area. Huge audiences come out.
What's the age?
13 to 19 years old.
13 to 19.
The Grand Slam Finals will be at the San Francisco Opera House, which we've sold out the last 2 years. So it's a very exciting event. It all starts on March 12th and goes through April 11th.
I wouldn't call this an industry, but this is a growing industry of sorts, or a growing, certainly, phenomenon. I mean, the desire to have young people do slam and the kind of slam competitions we're seeing, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, our organization is much more than just the Poetry Slam. The Poetry Slam is just one thing we do at this point of year. But there certainly is a rising phenomena of young people picking up the pen and writing and wanting to perform on stages, competitive and non-competitive. It's really incredible, and it's exciting for older writers like myself to see this passion that young people bring to the art form.
A lot of vitality, a lot of excitement. You say they're writing the poetry, but a lot of them are actually memorizing for oral performance, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, certainly we're largely situated in the art form of spoken word, which is poetry that's written to be performed specifically. And it is oral poetry. It's, you know, O-R-A-L, but also A-U-R-A-L, from the mouth to the ear. So the audience plays as critical a role as the poet themselves.
Forgive this old fuddy-duddy of poetry, but are these kids learning how to do villanelles? Are they learning prosody, you know, meter and all that, scansion?
I mean, they are. I mean, you know, so our goal is not necessarily to teach young people poetry per se. It's really to give them access to their voices, and the poetry is an incredible tool. Originally, we just want to open the floodgates and get young people writing and understanding the power of their voice and understanding that poetry is what they need it to be. As they get more involved in the art form, like some of the poets here today, they delve much deeper into sort of some of the traditions of poetry, so they have a broader frame of reference to work from.
Well, we're going to talk with these poets in a moment, but you founded this while you were a graduate student at SF State.
Were you influenced
by poetry in the schools program at State?
No, I wasn't influenced by poetry in the schools so much. I was influenced a little bit by June Jordan's Poetry for the People, for sure. But I was actually probably mostly influenced by the lack of diversity in that program, you know, both in terms of ethnicity, but also diversity of art form.
June Jordan was a friend of ours, of course. We miss her, and a tremendous influence on poetry in the Bay Area, and some of the young poets are here with us. Let's find out who you guys have been influenced by. Simone Crew, we'll start with you.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've grown up really around Youth Speaks. As one of the younger people in the room, I've been a seventh grader and had a Youth Speaks mentor come into my middle school and been really influenced by them. So seeing young people like me on stages has done a lot for me as a kid, knowing that my voice can be heard and that there are people there who are willing to listen.
But you went to the nation's capital. You got involved in mm-hmm. a whole thing with American Spirit, Woody Guthrie, and actually Sheryl Crow and Robert Redford were there. You have a kind of an environmental pedigree, in fact. I love the name Girls Gone Green.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Youth Speaks has afforded me a lot of crazy opportunities. It's really been kind of a strange whirlwind year for me. You find that when you're involved in an organization and you've put in a lot of time, that all of a sudden, for some reason, it comes back to you, which has been really great. I've had the opportunity to do stuff with Robert Redford. Lord and I have been on NPR talking with him about his work with Going Green organizations. It's been really cool.
Well, speaking about green, you got a poem called Cutting Grass, though it is an anti-war poem. Mm-hmm. And why don't you read it for us?
Sure.
Do it for us.
Here we go. It's called Cutting Grass. Joe cuts the grass while waiting. Children round with hunger are replaced with thirsty blades of grass on his front lawn. They say you can never know which civilian approaching your tank begging for food is harboring a bomb. Both Joe and Nathan plow down the opposition. Just to be safe, Nathan isn't the only one at war. His father is fighting too, hands clenched around the lawnmower handles if he could pull the trigger and kill death. Pre-traumatic stress disorder is an epidemic. Unknown vehicles can send shivers down Joe's sweaty spine, fear coagulating between his gentle rolls of fat, the wrong car, and Joe has lost. Black cars roll in bad news for military families. Wars don't merit political poetry. This is larger than a president or an election gone astray. Nathan is bigger than the politics that led him to Iraq. We normalize death, using numbers instead of names so that we don't have to mourn faces. 3 months into his deployment, Nathan's unit received their body armor. Joe cries, his rounded middle jiggling slightly in an effort to contain himself. He tells me his pride isn't big enough to stop the tears his son deserves. Joe is Nathan's father, and Nathan isn't dead. Joe hid his diploma, but Nathan was persistent. He wanted the adventure, wanted to save something, wanted to be so far away from high school. See, Nathan was just so over high school, he wanted the adventure. The army said they'd pay for it. Joe cuts the grass while waiting, watching the front lines fall. They say you can only be so fast, so strong, and so brave. But that won't stop a bullet. Joe cuts the grass at angry angles, mimicking a Vietnam memorial in his front lawn, making deep gashes into the wrist of the world we want to bleed, to see what's underneath. We expected a revival, a discovery that our bodies would form crop circle messages from a god we don't know how to believe in anymore. Joe is still at home. The grass is winning the war. Someone died today from his son's unit. His son is either mourning or dead. Joe is Nathan's father, and he goes back inside. Waits for the news. It was someone else's little boy. Number 1,306 to die, Corporal Mark Bloomfield. He told his mother, Brenda, he had no intention of being killed in a foreign country. She could see the bad news rolling up into her driveway from her living room window. Joe never used to cry this much. Brenda's wrists are bleeding. Her world was cut open. Nathan is tired of adventure. Mark Bloomfield is dead. Joe cuts the grass while waiting, creating a memorial in his front lawn. He wants to see it bleed.
Done well, by the way. Thank you. Thank you for that. That's Simone Crew, who is a student, high school student at Lick Wilmerding. And what inspired you to write that poem?
I've done a lot of work with the ACLU, and through that work with the youth activist group there, we went to Camp Pendleton a few summers ago and met with a lot of people. We did work talking about military recruitment, what leads people to go to the Army, and talking to families of people who have their children in Iraq who have actually lost children. And through this program, I ended up talking to a lot of families about why their sons and daughters had been to war. And it was a really powerful experience for me. And these stories, names changed, numbers changed, are really the stories of people that I've met.
But it's a story. It's a narrative. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you see somebody in your mind cutting grass? Somebody named Joe, like every day, six-pack Joe or whatever?
I mean, it's hard almost to be told, okay, do the poem. Because for me, it has to be a lot of acting. You have to take yourself back to that place. Because in performance poetry, you can't just make it, you know, emote on paper. You have to then be able to get to that place, you know, when you snap your finger on the radio or on a stage.
Denizen Kane is also with us. He's a musician, poet, artist, and resident with Youth Speaks. Three times on Deaf Poetry Jam on HBO. Russell Simmons brought me the tennis shoes I'm wearing today, by the way. That's true. They're his brand name.
Okay.
Came in here and he had two pairs of tennis shoes. I said, thank you for that, Russell. That's very nice. We should mention that Denizen is an international performer involved in hip-hop with the Typical Cats Collective back in Chicago. Now, when did you leave Chicago?
I left Chicago in 2001.
Very different world here.
Very, very different world.
I heard Scott Simon doing an editorial this weekend about John Burris and saying, in Chicago, it's very tough for us to get embarrassed politically.
Ah, that's true.
This is a good line, I thought.
Home of machine politics. I miss a lot of people in Chicago, but not the winter so much.
No, you wouldn't miss that. What poets have influenced you?
Well, I think growing up in Chicago, it was a collision of a lot of different experiences culturally and a lot of different kinds of influences. So being firmly a part of the hip-hop generation, the first people I heard speaking verses were people like KRS-One, Rakim, Big Daddy Kane, Chuck D from Public Enemy. But you start to pull at that fabric and you kind of unravel a larger tradition. So learn about cats like Langston Hughes, learn about women like Sylvia Plath, you know what I mean, Anne Sexton, and even cats like Pasolini. And
Ever go farther back, like to Emily Dickinson?
Oh, sure. You know, it's interesting. We were talking the other day that there was a really popular battle MC from New York called Wordsworth. And then, of course, there's Wordsworth. And we were thinking that we should get Wordsworth into You Speaks to teach a workshop on Wordsworth. I think it would be fresh.
I like that idea. Well, I don't know. You know, we're hearing certainly a lot of poems that suggest that poetry does come out of deep emotion and political sensibility and pain often. And Let the Dead is one of yours that maybe we can hear you do.
Sure. Thank you for bringing that up. It's a 2 16-bar verses, and I just wanted to point out, because you spoke about villanelles and scansion and things like that, and I think at You Speaks we really feel compelled to defend the creativity of the youth. And when we speak to the youth about forms like pantoums and villanelles, haiku, tankarenga, that we want them to know that these are revered things, but at the same time they're created by men and women. And the forms that have come out of the creativity of youth, like a 16-bar verse for a hip-hop song, is an equally powerful form, you know? So anyway.
Just to have that whole range to know what the other forms are. Yeah.
Exactly.
Good for
that
you.
They're part of that continuum. But this joint is called Let the Dead, and it's for the children of Fruitvale and East Oakland. So every moment I walk, I see a chalk outline of a dead body reclining in a supine position, yes. We're on a mission, our bones unlocks the pine box. Our flesh is the drug and our soul detox. With love, let the dead bury their bone dead. They love their lives and don't know they don't own them. See, the flesh belongs to the soul and the soul belongs to the spirit for show. One man must understand he belongs to the people. The masses of the people belong to the land. All lands are a part and parcel of the planet. And what happens when the planet begins to demand its restitution for the pollution that we give it and sends hurricanes and tsunamis on the living? And what happens, in fact, when the ice caps get peeled back? Cities flood, but there is no water in the tap. So maybe we roll hard. Even through the graveyard, all end up in it. Death can't be prevented, but the coffin and the tombstone can be upended, and the lifespan can be supernaturally extended. Life is a script in the midst of being edited, and the offer that the author loves the work like a father loves the son and the daughter. We ought to pay attention to self as a subject in the moment of action, and the way you actin', it ain't worth no mention. Slack be the object of your intention. You can claim my aims are so pretentious, but I am in the business of suicide prevention. They don't cultivate the culture. They water the market down. Beware of the mark of the beast now. And they target the youth, so baby, keep your crown. And these tall trees will never be cut down.
That is in Kane. Thank you for that. And it's too bad we're on radio, because this man was reciting from memory with his eyes closed and making some hand and face gestures that really, almost like being a thespian, isn't it? That is an actor. Yeah.
Wow. It's interesting that Simone brought up that reference, and I don't think it's an unfair comparison at all, but I think it's a unique experience. I think I've never been an actor or a thespian, so I don't know how it feels, but I know that for a lot of the youth that participate with You Speaks and who are just part of this movement in general, that they really have a sense that they're unlocking something that's very deep within them. You know what I mean?
And I also got the feeling from you of music. Sure. I mean, you're almost in some ways, your music background certainly helps you with poetry. It cross-fertilizes, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I've never seen a contradiction between those forms. Right?
No, there's no contradiction, probably. We're also pleased to have Lauren Whitehead with us, who is program director of Youth Speaks and also a poet in her own right, product of the University of Michigan, emerging national star of the world of slam poetry. She won a sonnet slam in Ann Arbor. You sonnet slams, they do Petrarch sonnets, or what kind of sonnets do they do? It's just 14 lines, huh?
Yeah, we were actually able to take Shakespearean sonnets and rework them so that they fit into our framework. So some folks in that competition sang the sonnet with their bands. Other folks did interpretive dance about the sonnet while it played in the background. Some people, it was basically take a Shakespearean work and rework it. And I wrote a group piece with a friend of mine, Mariama Lockington, and we had some musicians behind us, and we sort of took the idea of his sonnet number 14 and expanded it to deal with our own love lives and death.
Love life is a subject that you write about. In fact,
often, quite often.
Yeah. I read one of your poems, Whiplash. In fact, maybe we can hear about a minute of that poem if you'd be kind enough.
That's not the love poem. If you're interested in hearing the love poem, this
well,
is not it.
When you have even a reckless woman needs a careful man to hold her, that strikes me as And
that's in the poem called Escape from New York.
I'm sorry, I'm confusing the titles of the poem.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
It's okay.
Escape from New York is a poem about an interracial love and walking out in the daylight and being seen, but being able to adjust to that, essentially, wanting to be called baby, you know. Either one, whichever you feel. Maybe we need a love poem, actually.
Okay, how about a love poem? this is called Escape from New York, and it's written after a Nikki Giovanni poem called Just a New York Poem. And all I really want to do is crawl into your bed and nestle into your dreams and wonder and breathe with you again. And all I really want to feel is the weight between my legs and to rock and relearn the curved rhythm of you. And all I really want to see are your blue eyes turn green when you change your T-shirt in the morning, or the way your biceps flex when you pull your pants past your knees. And I just really want to know if you still watch me the way I watch you, blue-eyed and breathing. If you've been able to sleep easy in that big bed in that big Apple City, or if you have needed a pillow instead of a person to sleep next to, too. And I just really want to say that I miss you. That I know I ain't been the most soothing of sleepmates in the past. That I know I came to bed with my shame and my secrets, my nightmares of holding your hand in Harlem and being seen. I know that loving me is lots like a paradox, but I have to be forward and say, uproot from New York and move to the Bay to be with me anyway, so we can do crazy things like look at each other when we're talking, or hold hands and go walking, or painting renegade art on brick walls in the daytime, cause baby, I ain't afraid of the daylight no more, so come closer, cause even a reckless woman needs a careful man to hold her. Let's let go and fall again, cause I just really want to call you baby and hear you say yes and yes again over. And even when I wasn't much of a lady, you were always such a man and you were so understanding. And even when I was so confused and still demanding, you were so available and able to talk about it all the time. But I was so annoyed and not wanting to talk about it all the time. And we were so interracial, we had to talk about it all the time. And I didn't want to talk. And I didn't want to listen. And I didn't want to grow. I wanted to stay in my room without you or any people. To live alone in my room without you or any people. And look what kind of woman that fear has made me. A foul mouth and a cheat. A wound woman filled with hot air and wicked dreams. But God made some kind of man out of you. Some sexy kind of man out of you. Because you found heart to speak to me still. To come again this close to me still. So please excuse if I still find that sexy baby. If I slip and call you baby, baby. It's all I really want to do. And maybe just nestle with you. Or maybe sweet dream next to you, or maybe hold hands and make love and make babies with you that have brown eyes that turn green when they change their speech, who skip through big cities on rainy fall evenings, who are never afraid to sing loud or love openly like I know how to now. So don't say it's too late for me. It can't be too late for me. I am a woman and I'm roaring and I know now, baby, and I am not afraid of the daylight, of the daylight, no more.
Okay, thank you so much, Laura Whitehead. Some lucky man out there, boy. a very sexy poem. And baby, I want to make babies with you. That's kind of the message. Meanwhile, we're going to bring you listeners into this. If you have some thoughts about slam poetry and about the new kind of poetry we're hearing here, if you want to talk to any of our young poets or talk to our guest, Jim Cass, who is founder and executive director of Youth Speaks Teen Poetry Slam, find out more about the Poetry Slam. It's all about poetry this hour and poetry slamming, and you can join us toll-free, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or SiriusXM satellite. It's 866-733-6786. Lines available to you now, 866-733-6786, or send an email to forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Next week, scores of young people will begin competing in the 13th annual Youth Speaks Poetry Slam. And we spoke earlier with Sally Joan Baker because it's the 25th anniversary of We Poets, which provides job training and literacy skills to young people in what are often described as underserved neighborhoods. With us, James Cass, who is the executive director and founder of Youth Speaks and the Teen Poetry Slam, and Lauren Whitehead, who is a poet and program director of Youth Speaks. And we've got a couple of other young poets with us, Denison Kane and Simone Crew. Want to mention once again that you can join us here. Be interested in hearing some of your thoughts about this, particularly some of you who are maybe a little more traditional like I am, you know, John Donne guy and all that. And what you, I appreciate the slam poetry, I really do. And what you're hearing here, it's a different kind of poetry, though I've had to immerse myself in it through the years and really get used to it in ways that have opened my eyes. You can join us. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. It's a forum that is very oral and very emotive and expressive and a performance art, as James Cass said earlier, O-R-A-L and A-U-R-A-L. And James Cass and Lauren Whitehead, let's explain a little bit what, well, Lauren, first with you, you were one of these poets, then you became a mentor, I guess, after you crossed the Rubicon of 19. Is that what happened?
I actually started writing poems when I was 19 in Ann Arbor. So I was already beyond the age of when I could participate in the youth slam. But I was slamming at the collegiate level. And then I was working for James's brother, Jeff, who runs a program called the Volume Youth Poetry Program in Ann Arbor. And he invited me to be a mentor or a coach at Brave New Voices, which is our international festival that happens every year. And I went there and I was blown away because I saw 500, almost 600 young poets that were speaking from their hearts. And they had a group of peers and a community of peers. And I was totally, totally turned out and never wanted to do anything else. So I ended up working for James here. But I think the point is that when you age out of the slam, when you become 19 years old, I think your role shifts as you become a service provider as opposed to a service receiver. So we hope that 19-year-olds, after they age out of the slam, will become the folks that are then teaching workshops to the 13-year-olds, that become the folks that are then transforming their work into pieces of theater through the Living Word Project. They become the folks that are learning how to teach young folks to do what they've been doing for years. So I think there's a really great continuum that happens at 13 to 19, you are a participant. 19 to 24, you are a service provider. 24 and beyond, you're James Cass.
And this has been going on 13 years, James Cass.
This slam has been going on for 13 years. I want to just talk real quickly. Like, there's a difference between slam poetry and oral poetry in general. Like, slam, you know, when you're writing for the poetry slam, you understand that you're looking for immediate gratification and immediate response from audiences and from what we call judges, although it's a mock judging form. And oral poetry in general, which is really what You Speak as an organization is situated in, which is this idea that there is a history. And the tradition of oral poetry is, you know, much larger than just this contemporary movement that these young people are a part of. But it goes back into...
It goes back way before Gutenberg.
And John Donne, you know, is part of it too. So, I mean, that's a real critical thing. We're trying to activate young people's brains and tongues so that have them understand that they're part of a you know, centuries-old oral tradition from every part of the planet. And that the poets who have come before have given them the tools that they use now, and they're leaving tools for the poets who will come a century from now.
That's good to hear for an old T.S. Eliot guy like me who believes in the tradition and all,
I call it loading the cannon. because I think that when I was at the University of Michigan, I didn't get accepted into the undergraduate creative writing program because I was writing in a different style. Although I was still reading Philip Levine and Ezra Pound and Shakespeare, and I was learning that they're, you know, I was learning the way that they write poems, but then I was taking that home and I was writing poems in my way and there was no space for me.
That's why Cornel West had to leave Harvard and go to Princeton, basically.
Yeah.
And it's actually, you know, when I was in grad school at State, you know, and I love T.S. Eliot and he has that great quote where he talks about, you know, critics in your own poetry. Once you write a poem, it's no longer yours. It's, you can talk about your intention, but it's the readers to tell you what it means. So I love that. But I also, when I was at State, I was introduced to language poetry, which I really enjoyed and loved, but it took me years of education to access it. And part of why I started the organization was that reaction to that. There were so many barriers set up for young people to access this incredible art form of we call poetry. And so I wanted to remove a lot of those barriers and just give young people, here you go. Take a pen, take a piece of paper. Go ahead,
start writing. And where do you get your funding, James?
Ah, that's a great question because, you know, the times are tough here in post-Bush America. But, you know, I mean, we're fortunate that here in the Bay Area there are a lot of individuals and foundations who have been supporting us. When I started the organization, we had no dollars. We were a volunteer-run organization for about 3 or 4 years. We're now a $2 million annual budget. But thank you to the foundations and the individuals who support young people in their creativity and their activism.
And let's hear from our listeners, and we'll go to a caller in Novato. Geraldine, good morning.
Good morning. I just want to say how impressed I am with this forum. It is unbelievably beautiful, and I was actually in tears driving down the road listening to this beautiful, beautiful poetry, and I just feel like a whole new aspect of life has opened up to me, and I'm really going to look into this more. I am so impressed, and I am so filled with hope for this world, and and now I want to write poetry, and I'm 66.
Pen to paper, Geraldine. Go ahead. And can she attend the slam?
I mean, she absolutely can. And, you know, all the information is on our website at uspeaks.org. But, you know, the events are all month. They start March 12th and go to the Grand Slam Finals at the Opera House on April 11th. And I will say, Michael, all these young people write, not all of them, but a lot of them write about very painful personal experiences. But all the adults who come, particularly for the first time, leave saying just what she said, which is, I feel so much more hopeful now and optimistic about the future.
Well, thank you, Geraldine, for that call. And we'll hear next from Ajit. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to, I tuned in late, about 10 minutes late into the program, so I didn't catch all the stuff that happened before. But I just wanted to, like the previous caller, applaud the two pieces of poetry that I just heard, the last, and they were absolutely fantastic. And it occurs to me that when the poet himself or herself says or sings her own poetry, you can never equal that moment compared to then reading it afterwards. And I don't know why. I guess I'm mildly shameful about not knowing exactly what slam poetry is, but if it, I mean, as the word suggests, if it means something like, if it includes the energy that with which I just heard those two pieces of poetry, then that is also commendable, that extra energy that comes into play.
It's a very energetic form, and I thank you for that. How would you define slam, James or Lauren or either or Denizen or Simone? I mean, if you had to give me kind of a quick lexical definition of a sentence or two, what would you say slam is?
I think slam.
I just came from Jupiter, and I have to find out.
I think slam is the game that spoken word artists play when they want to have fun with their words. So I think that spoken word artists spend a lot of time trying to write from a place of urgency so that it also translates on the page, so that it's not just something that you hear or that you can hear, but that it's equally beautiful on the page and that there is a form to it and there's stanzas and there's line breaks that mean something and that matter. But I think that when you're talking about slam, which is the game of getting your poem to fit into 3 minutes, getting an audience response from it, sort of being better than your other wordsmith that's sitting next to you, I just think it's the game that spoken word artists play.
Yeah, it's always a different audience too. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you're just like an actor. You get a different response every time you perform. You're going to say something, James?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, a poetry slam is a mock poetry competition. There's judges and all that, and it's totally arbitrary. We actually score the poems with numbers. It's totally ridiculous. We all know it's totally ridiculous, but it's this incredible tool, because where else do you get 3,000 people coming out on a Saturday night to listen to poetry, much less the poetry of teenagers?
Well, here's some listeners. Here's Casey, who says, so many poetry slams are read angrily, not sometimes, but as a rule. Is there any room to not act like an aggressive top dog? Is self-deprecation allowed? It's typically absent in hip-hop, where everyone tries to be the fiercest lion in the jungle. And, of course, everyone can't be the strongest or most scarifying. There must be those who go in a different direction, and that's what I'd like to hear. Well, I think we did hear that. but a lot of it, he's right, a lot of it's angry. Denison?
I think it's a very fair comment to make, and I think at first glance it may seem that way. I would propose that what most people encounter as representative of slam poetry, performance poetry, is just one slice of the pie. And just like the hip-hop music that's most readily available to you on your music video channel or on commercial radio is just one piece of the puzzle. You know, there's a huge culture of hip-hop out there that might speak to what the homie was saying and provide necessary counter-narratives, you know?
Well, you mentioned hip-hop, and another listener wants to know about the connection between slam poetry and rap music. Lots of connections.
Definitely. I think they're both an exercise in the art of presence, you know? I think I was really appreciating what you and James were speaking about, talking about connections to traditional poetry, and also reframing the picture to understand that what we're calling oral poetry is poetry. You know, most of the traditional cultures that we come from, poetry was meant to be spoken to a group of people. It was meant to move the air between us, just like the conversation we're having right now. And I think, you know, the slam and the kind of open mics and performances that we provided as venues for that art to be resurrected, for that magic to happen. You know, people don't consider that this piece of paper, you know, it's a technology that was developed to capture some essence of that, of this conversation that we're having now so people could make reference to it in a future time.
It's a very different experience to hear a poet read his or her work than to read it on the page. I mean, never the twain, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting. And I want to real quickly just say that I don't think we should apologize for the anger that's in a lot of the work.
Yeah.
Dennis is absolutely right. Not all of the work is angry. But there was a lot to be angry about, particularly these last 8 years. And, oral poetry, if it does anything...
Still a lot to be angry about.
I mean, and oral poetry, if it does anything, captures the current moment. It captures the contemporary voice. And what we think we're doing is really opening up pathways for the voice of 21st America to be heard. And we put up a mirror, and the young people reflect us back in the most raw image. And if we don't like what we see or hear, we should take the blame, not so much the young people who are doing the work. Bertolt Brecht, I think, said it best. He said, "You can't write poems about the trees when the woods are full of policemen."
I also like that Bertolt Brecht quote, "The man who laughs has not yet been told the terrible news." That's always
exactly.
But the same listener, Nate, says, "Are there any rap artists who have been influenced by or grown from the slam poetry movement?"
Absolutely.
I think that they're not always that they're not separate. Often that sometimes MCs or people that you might call rap artists, if they don't have their music, then they're Dennis and Kane. They're busting 16 bars that don't have the music or the airplay. And I think that a lot of what we do as poets and writers comes from this cipher, this idea of community and this idea of sharing ideas, which I think fundamentally is a hip hop idea, which is like everybody in this circle bobbing their heads, freestyling, saying whatever's on their chest and on their hearts. And I feel like our after school workshops are also an opportunity to do that, to come in, to say what you want to say, and then to transform it to something that's on the page. So I think the comment about anger is warranted and that it's true. But I also think that young folks that are coming into this art form have find anger the easiest emotion to access, especially in their writing and especially in trying to get something off their chest with urgency. I think that in our after school writing workshops, we come to other places of vulnerability, which is learning the nuance of your emotion, that maybe you're not angry, maybe you're frustrated, and how can that translate to the page? Or maybe you're not frustrated, maybe you're actually sad about something, and how can we get to the root of that emotion so that your poetry is true and that it's not always anger, but that it reflects the true human experience, which is emotion filled. And I think that that's what we're trying to get at, but that most young folks come from a place of anger right away. And we don't want the anger. We actually encourage the anger because I think it's sort of the beginning to the dig of what you're actually feeling in your belly.
Well, what was interesting about Simone's poem as well as Dennis's poem was it came out of anger not directed inwardly, but anger that was directed outward at, you know, people dying in Iraq or people dying on the streets of Fruitvale in East Oakland and so forth. In fact, how much do you guys revise?
I think it depends a lot for me. I mean, one thing about slam as a competition form means that you have a time limit. And so I'll start off with a poem that's like 7 pages long, you know, and I'm going to get points off if I'm going to try to perform this in front of judges if I perform.
So you have to cut it down.
Right. So it has to be 3 minutes, 40 seconds. Then I end up learning revisions. One thing that Lawrence taught me a lot actually is about revising and working with her and learning, you know, what she calls beautiful monsters. That sometimes there's lines that are fresh and amazing, but they don't fit with the poem or they take away from the overall perspective. So I think that's something that You Speaks has taught me a lot in terms of how to self-edit, and that sometimes the point that you're trying to put across doesn't involve all the hotlines that you think you have, you know.
Go to more calls. We go to Damien. Morning, Damien.
Good morning. I just wanted to congratulate the young poets on, you know, the poetry that they read. It was very, very outspoken, very extroverted, very, you know, potent form of poetry that they use. And I'm a young poet myself, you can probably tell, and I do enjoy the form of poetry that they're express, and I do think it's limited in some ways, since it's a new field that's being broken into. But what I really want to say is that I am a person that is more or less wanting to see more out of the young poet as far as their ability to dive into more extroverted words, bigger words, make these people think. I mean, they're saying that we're coming at them a little bit too aggressive and a little bit too straightforward because the words we're using are a little bit too direct and straightforward. I mean, you can look at a dictionary and just see how expansive it is and look how much words there are in this world. I mean, blow their mind with semantics, make a play on words. They don't even actually supposed to know that the poem is angry until they get through reading. They have to think about it and like, whoa, what was this person? What was actually on this person's mind? But as a young poet myself, I want to know how would I be a part of you guys' program or you guys' organization. For a young poet, how would a poet be a part of what you guys are doing?
Thanks for
James Cass. Tell them how to join the club.
I mean, you can just check out our website at uspeaks.org, and we have free workshops all the time. We have free events all the time, free performances. You can just get in touch with any of us. All of our contact information is right there on the website. There's unlimited opportunity for young writers in our organization.
Good luck to you, Damien. Thank you for calling in, and we'll go to more of your calls. We'll go to Nick in San Jose. Nick, hi.
Yeah, hi. Nice to hear the great poetry. I was wondering, it's kind of the same thing that the previous caller was saying, is if a teacher wanted to present this into a class, is there people that come out, is it just an underserved?
You have outreach in the classroom?
We do. So we actually work with tens of thousands of young people every year, and a lot of our programs take place in the high schools and middle schools throughout the Bay Area. We come, we do poetry performances, we do one-day workshops. We also do semester-long residencies. We also do professional development for teachers. We love to work with teachers. Again, just check out our website. It tells you everything you got to do to get in touch with us. We'll be there.
Teachers are more eager for this now, aren't they, than ever before?
Well, that's
really
the interesting thing. Yeah. So when I first went to the school, the first thing we ever did was a poetry assembly in schools, and I would ask 100 kids at, say, George Washington High School in San Francisco, how many of you write poetry? And two would feebly raise their hand.
Meekly, too.
You know, meekly. And yeah. Teachers didn't like doing it because the kids didn't enjoy it. You go to that same school 10 years later, 100, you know, of the 100 kids, now 50 raise their hand, and teachers love teaching poetry. So it's been this tremendous shift in just 10 years.
It's like a meme, you know, I mean, in the sense it's grown and grown in many ways exponentially. And yet the poetry community, I mean, the slam community has grown and expanded, but the poetry community has stayed, it seems to me, sort of around the same, more what you'd call like traditional poetry, where you have people reading, you know, poems that are not as emotive and don't have time limits and the sort of thing we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. Just interesting observation. Donna.
Yes, thank you so much. Hi, I'm enjoying this program so much. I just came in my kitchen and plugged in the radio when this young woman was beginning to read, and I can't tell you how wonderful this is. Just a little history. I am not a young poet. I'm an old poet. I belong to the Marin Poetry Center. They have a poetry in high school anthology. I have two poems in their fall anthology. They have open readings the fourth Thursday of every month. But I just want to tell you this. I didn't grow up here. I didn't know this well. So I grew up on the south side of Chicago.
Hey.
And we used to go to 67th and Drexel on payday and to the Sutherland Lounge. I sat and I saw Miles Davis and Earl Garner and Ramsey Lewis and Bill Evans. But the point of this is this. When this young lady said they're loading the cannon with power, the jazz, the people, the community, that was power. They called them black and tan clubs. You could walk all over the south side of Chicago then, and it brought the community together. What you are doing is you are bringing together a community, and we need this now more than ever. And please, will you give that website again? And also the poets that read, this young lady is very, very special. You all are. But your voice, honey, you got a voice out of this world.
Thank you. Thank you. Right. I appreciate that very
much. And thank you for your program, Michael. I'm a fan of yours.
Thank you for that. And James, you want to give your website again?
Sure. It is www.youthspeaks.org.
And these are the kind of responses we're getting here. This is Kimberly, who writes, sitting in my living room, completely blown away by the beauty of this young woman's meditation on interracial love and awakening. I applaud her courage. You know, it reminded me a little bit, I'm dating myself here, but you know who Janice Ian is?
I don't.
She was a singer who Leonard Bernstein discovered, in fact. Leonard Bernstein, excuse me. And she wrote about a song about interracial love, and it really had an enormous impact for its time. Asa writes, wow, I want to thank these wonderful young poets. Your art is melting the heart and opening the crowded mind of a tired, cranky, overworked, middle-aged mom. I'm blown away by your talent and insight. Keep it up. We need you. And thanks to Forum for always putting interesting things on the air. Gratefully, Asa. Thank you, Asa. Stephen from Oakland. Morning.
Good morning. I am a Bay Area educator and have had the privilege of working with several YouSpeaks poets over the years. And what I wanted to say is a comment and a question. One is that I've seen a lot of youth who were otherwise disengaged with school to actually become extremely engaged through the YouSpeaks program because it actually made their learning relevant. And so my question was, can any of your guests speak to either their experience themselves or seeing students with that process or how that's helped them engage? And I also want to say that I'm a longtime contributor to YouSpeaks and that these programs don't exist without funding. So if you are inspired today, please go to the website and
donate.
Do you
work for us?
Thank you, Stephen. That's not a plug. I didn't know he was...
Yeah, but meanwhile, when he said, find out about how this is affecting kids in high school, Lauren and Simone started pointing at each other here, like, it's you. No, you take this. No, you take this. But it would seem.
Out.
Well, Simone, I mean, you've seen this effect on fellow high school students, I imagine, haven't you?
I have. I mean, I just think that it's, in terms of my pointing my finger at Lauren, I've seen a lot less kids than Lauren has go through this program. And mm-hmm. I've also worked with them in a different way. And working with someone from a peer level is a lot different than trying to take a mentor role. For me, I have seen a lot of kids be more engaged with school. But, you know, honestly, I've always been a nerd, so I don't know how relevant this is to me.
I'll tell you one little anecdote that folks might like. I went to on a school visit, which is one of these assemblies that James was talking about, just a couple weeks ago to Richmond High School, which is a school I don't want to offend anybody, but I think is sort of traditionally has a student body that's unengaged mm-hmm. or disengaged, excuse me. And we went to an assembly and there was 500 young folks in the audience. And so it was our job to entertain 500 teenagers that are in one room together, you know, and an assembly. If any of you have ever been in high school, you know that an assembly is prime time to do anything but listen to whoever's giving the presentation. And so we did our assembly. And at one point in the back of the auditorium, a fight broke out. And at any given moment, a fight in any high school has the potential to turn an assembly into a riot.
A melee.
You know, for lack of better words, right? And I think that what happened was only 15 or 20 people that were sort of immediately around the fight were involved in it or paid attention to it because there was a young poet on the stage that was saying something so powerful that the rest of the 450 people mm-hmm. didn't care what was happening in the fight. So I think that poetry has the ability to help young people who can't focus or who are not used to focusing focus or have something that they agree with, to see a young person that is their age speaking from their heart and saying something that is so true, is so powerful, that other young folks want to be involved. They want to have that power. They want to have an opinion. They feel engaged and they feel like their voice matters. And that's, to me, the most powerful thing about what we do, is that we get young folks to believe that their voices matter, that soon that they will be able to not only participate in democracy, but that they have to participate in democracy because their opinions matter.
Mm-hmm. I also think that with the long lines of having their voices matter, group. I've seen that really, really reaffirming people that they have a place in the educational system by people who felt rejected by their own high schools or middle schools or wherever they at, to have a community of people saying, hey, we've created a classroom for you and you know that from here you can go to college and there are places for you and you have a legitimate voice in any type of system that you want to be in, gives people hope for the types of futures that they see themselves in. And so in that way, I think YouSpeaks mm-hmm. and doing poetry and having a community like this of people who will respect your voice has given people a different way to view who they can be. Because if you've never heard of poetry, you don't know there's this community out there.
Well, you're saying to a young person, you're giving them power, really. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You can express yourself, and you have the opportunity to express yourself in your own language, in terms of your own emotions and what you feel. That's what poetry is, and that's what poetry has always been.
YouSpeaks has two main rules, and the first one is there are no wrong answers. And that's not to say that there are no wrong answers, because clearly there are wrong answers, but that your opinion is valid here and that
we want
to hear.
You mean if you get to someone full of hate and bigotry, you're going to say there's no wrong answers?
Well, we ask them
to think about it.
Yeah, we ask them to think about it. And that we say that you're allowed to have that opinion here as long as you are willing to back it up and to stand by it. So we're not saying that if you're in a room with other young people and you say something that's racist or inappropriate, that the other young people aren't going to check you. We're saying that you're allowed to say that in this space, but beware that you might be checked by what you say. And then our second rule is as the standard is yourself, which is that we don't want you to write poems to be like Simone Crew or Lauren Whitehead mm-hmm. or Denizen Kane. We want you to write poems that reflect who you are. So those are the two things that we sort of hold in our spaces, that there are no wrong answers and the standard is yourself. And I think young people really respond to those two rules.
I think the analogy is similar to Howard Zinn and what he did with history, where he showed people that history is more than we just learned in the books, that it's not about memorizing the big moments, the big men, and the big wars. And I think we've tried to do the same thing with language. Poetry is not only what you've been taught. It's not only memorizing form and memorizing the big names and the big people. It's also an access point for anybody to come into this, you know, distilled use of language, this intelligent and creative use of language. And the reaction has just been tremendous.
I also like very much what Laura was saying, in effect, that poetry can make for better citizenship.
Yeah.
And a more vital democracy. So before we go and sign off here, more information about the slam, James?
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, it's great that everyone loved what we heard on the radio. It's better live. So come out to the Poetry Slam. All the information is on our website at youthspeaks.org. I also want to say there's a major show coming out on HBO that airs April 5th and then goes for 7 weeks, which in April is National Poetry Month, that covers these young poets from all across the United States. It's called Brave New Voices. Russell Simmons is actually one of the executive producers. It's going to be amazing.
If you see him again, thanks for the
I will. And it's because it really reflects the changing demographics of the United States. And we're actually doing a premier private screening on March 24th. So if people want to know about it, they can just send me an email.
Anybody here going to be involved in that?
Well, both Lauren and Simone are featured in the show, and we'll all be there. And Robert Redford is going to join us. So it's great.
Well, congratulations for your work, and thank you so much for sharing it here with many thousands of people who heard you today.
Thank you for
having
me.
Pleased to have had you.
Thank you, Michael.
And we thank James Cass, who again is the founder and executive director of YouSpeaks, Teen Poetry Slam coming up next week. Do attend if you have interest. We also thank Sally Joan Baker, who was with us earlier, executive producer and host of We Poets, El Cerrito-based public access program, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary. And thanks to Denizen Kane, Simone Crew, and Lauren Whitehead, and all of you, our callers and listeners. We are thankful for your listenership. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated in the evening, 10 to 11. Remind you, you can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or calling our listener comment line, 415-553-3300. Our thanks to Senior Editor Dan Zoll, to our producers, Kevin Guillory and Tina Lauerberg, to our engineer, Danny Bringer, and Forum's executive producer, Raul Ramirez. For all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.